We are back with another episode of Surviving the Fandom. My name is Tegwith, and I have a very special guest with us today, another specialist with us, McKenna. McKenna, how are you?
I am fantastic. Excited to talk more Survivor, as always, and happy to be here with you.
Yeah, I love getting to know a little bit more about like my co-hosts and why they love, you know, Survivor so much and what got them into the show. So as always, I'll just start. What got you into Survivor? How long have you been watching? And why do you have this obsession like I do?
Oh, great question. Great question. So I feel like if anybody knows me, they're sick of hearing me say this, but watched Richard Hatch on Biggest Loser, then saw him, then was like, all right, what the heck is Survivor? Started watching from Borneo. And then I was in the off season of Ko Rong and Millennials versus Gen X. So Millennials versus Gen X was my first season live, and what a great first season to have as your first live season. No new players returning players, just, you know, straight up Survivor. And it was great. And I was hooked from Borneo, surprisingly. And was like, all right, I gotta binge. And I have, you know, once I start really liking a TV show, I start deep diving, you know, go on YouTube, find interviews, you know, the whole nine yards. And it led to me finding the specialists as I love their fan perspective on the season. So I really got into the specialists during Game Changers and started like hardcore listening then. And then, you know, the rest is history. You just become a very persistent fan and you wind up here.
I love that. I love that so much. So, I mean, Borneo, you watched Borneo, obviously, like many years after it aired. What was the thing that really like hooked you? Was it just like the people? Was it just like, what about the show really kind of got you into it? Was it because you knew who Richard Hatch was already?
So my mom had watched Survivor while airing, but never, like, it wasn't a household staple. She fell off of it at some point. I remember like one episode being on and them getting a tree mail, but like nothing to be like, oh yeah, I remember this. So she was like, oh, you're watching that? Like, I love Boston Rob. And I was just like, I don't know who that is yet. So I just kept watching and was like, all right, this is fun. I like the way, obviously, Borneo, you're not going to get much for strategy or anything like that. So I really loved how the characters interacted with each other. And I mean, Rudy is just a gem of a human. So, you know, he really hooks you in. And then, going forward, it just felt like a completionist kind of thing too, of like, I gotta finish everything, but I also fell in love with everybody, you know, throughout watching all the seasons.
Now, this is a very silly, but did you know the lore of Rob and Amber when you got to All Stars, or was this new? Like, because when I watched, I also did not know the lore of Rob and Amber, and so like when the proposal came, I went, what is going on? Like, what is happening? This is crazy. And then I did a deep dive about it.
What? Yeah, I watched everything fresh. Like, nothing was really spoiled for me. Like, I thought I was unique with liking Parvati. Like, this is how, like, outside of the Survivor I was. And I didn't really find anybody until Heroes, Healers, Hustlers, when I went to Andrea's like People Now events. And I found some people that I could actually like talk strategy with, not just be like, these people are fun. So I could actually like deep dive within the community with some of the friends that I had made there. And then during COVID, the Russell Hantz Patreon group was doing an org with Fairplay. That was their first season. Then their second season, it went to the specialists versus TRHS, and that's where I met like the majority of my wedding party, my wife, like through Survivor is like my entire life, basically. Like, I owe it to like that one org is where I met like John, who I podcast with, like everybody, you know, in my current life was all like rooted in this one org.
Oh my gosh. That I hear that story so many times of like, you know, the survivor, like fandom. Obviously there are casual viewers of the show and that will always, but like the people who love the show, like we do, has connected people so many ways. I know players who have met their partners mm-hmm. because they were fans and they met via that. I know, I mean, many of my friends are made through Survivor, whether it's live watch parties, online, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. What is it about the show that you think like connects people so strongly?
It's really crazy, but I think it has to be everybody can have an opinion and you can be like, oh, that's wrong, but it's like it's still their opinion on things, and it opens a lot of discussion and discourse because there's so many different aspects to the game, the social, the strategic, the physical, the game creation. It brings a lot of people together because you can have so many different discussions without even repeating one.
Mm-hmm. And you can, and also even if you do repeat one, it's kind of fun.
Yeah. Like, you could maybe change your opinion on something based on, you know, what somebody else says. So, you know, it's really fun talking about Survivor and then, you know, justifying. So after we became friends, John, myself, and two other of our friends through this org, we decided to rank every player in Survivor history.
As one does.
Through 40. So then just the discussions of like, is this really terrible player better than this really terrible player? And it's like, well, they brought beef jerky in, so bad strategy. So like the discussions that you can have between like bad players versus good players versus, you know, middling players and trying to, you know, decide between that. It's just like, it's always a fun conversation no matter mm-hmm. what you're talking about. And it really like creates real debates and, you know, conversation. And I think Survivor is just some of the, you know, perfect topics, yeah. I guess, if you know what you're talking about.
Yeah, 100%. And I also think like, and I've said this many times before, but I think one of the beautiful things about like getting to talk to Survivor fans is you don't have to explain why. You don't have to explain why you like the show. You don't have to, everybody else you talk, like anybody to this day, like any conversation I have, even though it's the show is bigger than it has been in a long, long, long time. I say what I do, my hobbies, whatever, and they go, what? And I have to kind of explain why. And when you're hanging out with Survivor fans, you don't have to explain why. You automatically can just talk about somebody's name. And all of a sudden you have a conversation, you know, you can talk about that person's win. And so that then leads to connection, which then leads to, okay, we have something in common. Let's maybe strike up a different conversation. And I think that that's why like these friendships have formed or other relationships have formed, because Survivor is just this like amazing TV show, but it's also something that really does connect people.
Yeah, it's a catalyst for something deeper, because like now my friends and I, you know, don't just always talk Survivor. We have, you know, many different things to talk about now, but it was a great, you know, wedge point for me to make all these new friends. I made so many friends during COVID. It's insane. Like my mom said in her speech at my wedding, like, she was afraid for me during COVID that I would just be like shut up in my room. And then I made so many more friends than she could have ever dreamt about. Like this whole wedding is because of Survivor. And she was like, thank God that this thing happened for her, even though she's like, you're watching that show again? So how many times can you rewatch this season? I'm like, Mom, Don't tempt me.
Don't tempt me with a good time. Now, that actually brings me into a question that I want to talk to you about, because you have one of the best memory recalls, I feel like, of anybody that I've ever talked to. You, I mean, and I know you've probably seen the show many times, but I mean, so have I. So have a lot of people. You have this like almost eidetic memory of Survivor. Is this just because you've seen it so many times, or do you have this like amazing recall in your day-to-day life as well for other things?
I anything that I fixate on, I get super fixated on. So like I can hear a song on the radio if we're on the radio, or like just playing and be like, oh, they did this in this season of Glee and this person sang it. Mm-hmm. Like I can do it with a bunch of other shows, or like I have this memory of when I was a child. And then I was with my aunt this past weekend, and she was like, it's crazy what you remember. And it's just certain things stick in my head. Now, if you ask me to recite boot orders, I can do it, but it's not like, all right, this person I automatically remember is, you know, seventh place. That is not my specialty, but I could tell you when seeing a challenge, oh, this happened in 40, 39, and 22.
That's, I mean, it's really, truly very, very amazing, like your memory recall. And I feel like anybody who listens to your show or who listens to any of the patron, like patron podcasts that we have, it's just so, so obvious. Like not only you put in a lot of work, but also it just comes so naturally to you. It's so amazing. Like, before you watched Survivor, were there other, like, did you watch the other reality TV? Like is this like your reality TV thing that it's like, obviously it's your number one, but
right.
Is there something else that you also can, you know, do that with other than Glee? 'Cause me too.
I think Survivor was my introduction into this type of competition reality. Like I watched America's Got Talent, but like, that's not really much.
Yeah.
Or, you know, something along those lines. Like I watched, you know, The Biggest Loser, like I talked about, but I'm not reciting any of that. So I think it started with Survivor, moved into the challenge. I still can't recall a lot from The Amazing Race. Like I watched the race as it airs, and that's kind of it. Mm-hmm. for me. But something about Survivor hooked me where it was like, you're now going to remember this for like the rest of your life. And that's why when John and I were trying to come up with what we wanted to do for a show on the channel, when Phil and Alexa said, you know, we now have a platform for it. We were like, all right, so what do we do? And because they already have the recap, they have predictions and power rankings, like what is there to do? And then we were like, well, what if we use our brains and our, you know, past Survivor knowledge and, you know, relate things back to past seasons. And so it's just been so much fun to see that Survivor hasn't totally changed, because we are referencing things from, you know, pre-season 10 in the new era, where these things don't change fully. It's this strategy is now still, you know, being implicated in Survivor. And we'll watch an episode from the 20s that'll relate to this episode and be like, oh, we picked it just because it had the same challenge. But then all of a sudden, this person does the same thing. This person has a similar confessional. So we just like, it creates a chain of like, Survivor hasn't fully changed. It still has its roots in the older seasons that we love, even though Jeff is a little crazy in the new era.
Fried chicken and waffles.
Well, we did that in when that came up in 48, because there's been like chanting, so like LaFleur in Nicaragua, or Penner, you know, singing himself off in Philippines, things like that. So like we pick like silly topics too sometimes of like, all right, this was a big part to this episode of Fried Chicken and Waffles.
That was crazy. The Fried Chicken and Waffles thing was bad just because he said that's how we do it on Survivor. And I'm just like, dude, is that how we do it on Survivor? What are we doing here? Well, I think this brings up a really interesting topic, because, you know, the new era and now going into the open era, which is a new thing that we don't even know what that really is going to be, what that's going to look like. How do you feel, like, as somebody who binged and has watched many, many times, but who's also a relatively new, quote-unquote, newer fan, like myself, how do you feel like you've seen Survivor change even since you started watching live? And do you think that, like, Survivor has, like, long, like, do we think we're going to see season 100 of Survivor, that kind of a thing?
It's like one of those things that it should end, but I don't want it to, kind of thing, of like this open era, they're, I guess, making it an excuse for them doing whatever the heck they want instead of having, you know, a certain set of rules that we feel like Survivor should apply to, but now they're open. So they've already told us this, so we can't get mad. And it's like, well, no, we still can.
Do we blame Suri, Rizzo, and Ozzy because they were the thruple relationship, and Jeff went, well, thruples in Survivor, now that means we must be open.
Oh my God. One can only hope that that was his mentality, but it's definitely become a lot more kumbaya than, you know, from when I started watching. I also started watching when it was just in Fiji.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to think about because I've seen all the seasons. So it's like, I remember them being in other places, but I've only watched live Fiji. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it does have a different feel watching older seasons because, you know, the landscape does play into those seasons. But with this open era, there's things that maybe we didn't think about that they want to, you know, bring back into the game, that could be a twist or not even an advantage that, you know, could be in play. Like if they do a reward again where the winner gets to decide what person eats what, you know, that this could be a nice twist and a refreshing twist that the open era could bring. It doesn't always have to be, here's every advantage. So I'm hoping and praying the open era is, it lets you breathe. It's open. It's like, it's not, you know, bogged down with so many twists and things. It's just letting you know we can throw whatever at whatever time.
Yeah. I mean, we know I'm an eternal optimist for better or for worse. I really do think that like I think that they are just doing this. First of all, I think it's a little silly to make arbitrary eras. Eras mm-hmm. came about how the naturally. Game was played. They mm-hmm. they came about naturally because of people would watch the show, use what they saw on the show, and then go play the show with what they had just seen. And so we saw an evolution of gameplay because of that, because Survivor is not played in a vacuum, right? So we saw an evolution of gameplay because of that. And then with the new era is the first time like they named an era. It was, mm-hmm. there was like, you know, old school, new school. There was other stuff in between.
Like what we named it. Like that was the fans kind of naming it. This was like, this is a new era of Survivor.
Yeah. Yeah. And so like that was the first time that that era thing really happened. I mean, is that Taylor Swift's doing? Who knows? And blaming celebrities for things. Here we go.
Yeah, right.
And I really feel like maybe the new era, they put a set of arbitrary rules on themselves that they felt like they had to like do. Mm-hmm. And I really remember an article that came out. I want to say it came out right around season 46, 47, where Jeff basically, it was with Dalton Ross, and Jeff basically said, through the rest of this decade of eras, it'll be all new people. Like no returners at all. Cause that was at the mm-hmm. point where we were hoping 48 was going to be like a new era all-stars. We said, drop the four, keep the one. Let's see it. We mm-hmm. wanted some of that. And at that moment, I thought, are they just doing this because they're like, ah, we're so close. Like, this is ridiculous. Let's just finish this era out and then we can do whatever we like. Do you feel like they did that to themselves almost?
Possibly. I don't like that they're trying to fit themselves into like 10 season boxes. Now, when we did Celebrating Survivor, we did put, you know, seasons in 10 season boxes because it actually, it does fit within 10 seasons, a lot of them are like the same kind of feel throughout the seasons. But now naming it, this is the open era. Well, how open is it? Does it go for just the 10 seasons? And now you're changing your game. Like, you're still kind of putting it in a box where you should let the seasons breathe and let the seasons do what they're going to do. If, you know, 5 seasons is like, you know, this is a different set of gameplay, this 5 seasons, as opposed to the end half of the 5 seasons. Like, I feel like almost the new era is just such a different game from, you know, 41, 42, 43, 44. Like, each set of 2 is such a different kind of flow and season. And to, they have similarities running throughout it. So now are they projecting throughout the open era to have similarities running throughout the entire 10 seasons? I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I think it's going to be really, really interesting to watch. And, you know, does this mean that ever they're going to throw a bunch of things at the wall and see what sticks? Does this mean that we're not going to get any new twists and it's going to only be old stuff? Are we going to see, like, I really hope we see, like, camp raids back, like Pearl Island's camp raids, or
stealing, you know, a castaway for a little bit of time, even if it is to mess up the vote or just for reward or something like that, where they're forced to compete, like how Nate could have been, that they had to, that they sat him out in Cook Island. So, you know,
I think that there are a lot of really, really fun things that they could bring back that are reminiscent of like old school, but like how would new era, like new school players play with those kind of old school twists? What if things are hidden and they actually need clues? Like rewatching Survivor China, I forgot how much fun those clues were.
Yeah.
Like, having to pass along a clue to somebody else that you don't actually get to keep, but maybe you're building a bond, maybe you're painting a target, who knows? Like, it's very fun.
It's a hidden idol that you wouldn't think is an idol. So like, you know, the archway, but then you also have Philippines with the idol that's on the rice container. Mm-hmm. You're not thinking that symbol is going to be, I mean, now people might be, but like, I'm still not thinking innately like this is an idol,
right? It's interesting because Jeff said when Adam tried to find the play the fleur-de-lis, he after that, I believe Jeff said like he was never going to hide anything at tribal council, he was never going to hide anything at camps anymore because he doesn't want them destroying the set. Kind of like when you go to an escape room,
all right,
there are things that say, don't touch, this is not a part of the game. Don't touch the air conditioning thing. Like, you know, he doesn't want people destroying the set. One thing I've been thinking about a lot is, do we feel that the change of locations, like, do you think that the change of locations made it so that they were forced to create new ideas and new things, and they were okay with people possibly destroying the set because they had to destroy it anyway? Do you think that staying in Fiji, yes, might pose a problem as a backdrop, but do you think staying in Fiji has kind of created this almost stagnant idea pool because they're like, well, if we can reuse it, let's just reuse it?
Well, I think that's a great question that you bring up, but at the same time, tribal council is always changing. They're not going to have that giant, you know, arena for a tribal council each season. So they, Devin's destroying that one block is not going to mean anything. So I think they should enact some of these things where it's like, it's not destroying it if it's easily removed.
Mm-hmm.
Or like now, you know, Adam found the fleur-de-lis. Now it's like, all right, he found it. This is now not a real idol. We're just putting this fleur-de-lis back, you know, kind of something to that extent where it's like he found it, but we're putting this back. And I think they can do that. And we also have always talked about idols at challenges, idols at, you know, this place, that place. And it's an easy way to incorporate a fun twist on idols where it's like, that is a beware advantage because you are getting it in front of the entire, you know, entire mm-hmm. season, you're trying to grab that. So, or, you know, bring back Nora's thing in Island of the Idols where she had to be the caller.
Yeah. Yeah. These are
simple ways to use your beware advantages that you like and, you know, incorporate them in maybe a more old school way that's more fun.
Yeah.
I mean, not that, you know, dipping your hand in red paint or like, you know, red paint being splattered everywhere isn't fun, because honestly that is. But at the same time, it's just like old school isn't bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we can dive back into this. It's not, you don't have to keep changing and moving forward. You can move forward with looking at the past.
Yeah, 100%. Now, question for you. Mm-hmm. I would love to know what your favorite season of Survivor is. Maybe, and not necessarily best. It doesn't have to, you know, it doesn't have to say, you don't have to say what you think is the best season, but just one, mm-hmm. which one was your favorite and why? And then, I think I know the answer to the second question. Who's your favorite winner and why?
Ah, okay. We'll start with the winner. Get it over with.
One thing I love about summer is how easy everything feels. The days are a little more relaxed, and I find myself reaching for the same comfortable go-anywhere pieces again and again. That's why I keep coming back to Quince. They focus on well-made essentials that naturally become those everyday staples you actually live in all season long.
Quince's 100% European linen pants and shirts are breathable, easy to throw on, and a summer upgrade your rotation needs, starting at just $34. And Phil, I told you this before, but I don't often wear linen shirts or linen pants, but now that I have them from Quince, I find myself going back to them time and time again, whether it's an upscale outdoor event or if I'm just hanging by the beach or at the pool, I'm reaching for these shirts all throughout the summer. Also, their tees are soft enough to live in all day, and the lightweight cotton sweaters are exactly what you want when summer nights cool down. Everything at Quince is priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They work directly with ethical factories and cut out the middlemen, so you're paying for exceptional quality, not brand markup. And it's not just clothing. Quince has become a trusted favorite for everything from home to travel to everyday essentials.
Make your summer wardrobe easier. Go to quince.com/specialist for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. Now available in Canada, too. That's quince.com/specialist with an S at the end for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/specialists. Your paycheck date could soon become the most irrelevant number in your life. Earnin is a non-bank finance app, 5 million people and growing. The concept is almost annoyingly simple. You earn money, you access it. Up to $150 per day of what you've already worked for, up to $1,000 between paychecks. Tips are optional, and standard transfers take 1 to 2 business days with no mandatory fees. Expedited transfers start at $3.99 and cap at $5.99. It's not about emergencies. It's just a better way to exist financially day to day. Worth checking out. Look, you all know I wear a lot of hats, and nothing annoys me more than waiting for money that I earned while due dates inch closer and closer. I did the work, so what's taking so long? We live in an era of instant gratification, so why don't we demand instant access to our money? The most essential thing we need to participate in society is the thing we wait for the most. That's absurd. End the absurdity today. Download Earnin on the App Store or Google Play, spelled like earning money without the G. Type in the specialist under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. Earnin is a financial technology company, not a bank. Access limits are based on your earnings and risk factors. Standard cash outs take 1 to 2 business days with no mandatory fees. Expedited transfers available for a fee. Tips are voluntary and don't affect the service. Available in select states. Terms and restrictions apply. Visit earnin.com for full details. In Backtrack by Mark Cameron, the past is prologue for a violent criminal with 3 names, Ricky Lee Pink. Pink has been rotting in jail for years, plotting revenge against the man who thwarted his almost perfect theft of $5 million in diamonds. That man, Wayne Cutter, is deceased, but his grandson, Arliss, is very much alive, for now. Pink and Cutter are about to collide in a violent confrontation on a floating city in the middle of the water, a massive cruise ship traveling around Alaska's Inside Passage. An experienced U.S. Marshal, Arliss must move fast but cautiously, or he may be the last of the Cutter family tree. As Survivor fans, it's not just the strategy and social dynamics that keep us enthralled. It's also the idea of man versus wild. That concept is at the heart of all Mark Cameron's novels, and it's one of the main reasons I think Backtrack is a must-read. If you're an outdoor enthusiast, fan of wilderness thrillers by authors C.J. Box and William Kent Krueger, or just love a fast-paced action thriller from the likes of Brad Thor and Jack Carr, Backtrack is the book for you. An Alaskan resident and Texas native with nearly 30 years in law enforcement, Cameron is a master of action and gritty detail. He brings explosive authenticity to Backtrack as U.S. Marshal Arliss Cutter's manhunt will employ all his skills and knowledge as a member of the U.S. Marshal's Service. Backtrack by Mark Cameron is available now wherever books are sold.
It's obviously Parvati, but I do have to shout out Sarah Lucina. I love her Game Changers game. And if you watch our podcast, I've talked about how much I love that game. I think it is one of the best winning games. I love how she did it in Game Changers. Obviously Parvati, but if I had to not pick Parvati, it would be Sarah's winning game. And then favorite.
But why Parvati though?
Because one, she's a queen. This was pre-knowing, anything about her. I watched Cook Islands, loved her from Cook Islands. Didn't know that she was going to go on to be, one of the greats of Survivor. And then I was like, holy crap, she won. That this is amazing. And then I'm like, all right, she's coming back for another season in Heroes vs. Villains. Like, this is great. Like, to have your player that you pick out from the seasons that, like, this is your favorite player, to then have them win and not know that they're going to win is, like, such an awesome feeling. Like, if you pick a winner pick for, the new seasons that are upcoming and then they win, like, I did it, so it was really great to see, like, my favorite player who I didn't know was, the queen, yeah. Or queen adjacent, that she actually won the game, because you would not tell by Cook Islands.
Right. You would not tell. And then, so what is your favorite season and why?
Yeah.
The harder question, I believe.
I go back and forth on a lot. Like, I love Heroes versus Villains, but then there are stale points. I think Second Chance is a great season, but now I'm also naming two returnee seasons.
That's okay.
So Panama really creeps up into just, like, this is an all newbie top tier season. Where there's drama, there's gameplay, because the wonderful world of Suri is in this. You have the opposition between Terry and Aris, like, you have Shane and Courtney, like, all around Panama is just an amazing season. So all newbie season, I would probably have to say Panama, but returnee, I mean, you can't go Heroes versus Villains. It's just too good.
It's just so good. It's the one, that's why I always say you don't necessarily have to pick the best, because I personally believe that on paper, Heroes versus Villains is probably the best. I mean, from, like, start to finish, there are dull moments, but there are dull moments with almost every single season. And I feel like just, like, episode one is crazy. And then finale is wild. Like, it's just, it's a great season. I feel like Panama is a great pick that I feel like I don't hear a lot that often. Mm-hmm. And also I'm seeing a lot of people saying that Panama is bad online now. And I'm
that is just wrong. See, like, here, like, me saying that's a wrong opinion, but some people must have other reasons for that I would love to hear and see why they think that way. But, like, I don't know. Panama is just, like, it has everything you need. Yeah. It's weird when it opens with older men, older women, younger men, younger women. I think that is just a different twist, especially when the older women are in their 30s and I'm 29 right now. So
being 35 is crazy. Like, come on. Like, that is ridiculous, but whatever. I think that you're right. I think that's really, really interesting. It's so funny. I talked to, when I was in LA for the finale, I talked to Tony Squares, mm-hmm. and we get along so well. Like, he's a great guy. we waited in line all the time. And then I was talking about this NPR article that I was like, I hate this list. This list is terrible.
Oh, yeah,
like, this list is like, this list actually actively makes me mad. Like, not a huge fan of it. Mainly because like China was like 28 on the list. And then like Winners at War was like 4 or something. And those are two things that I think are, that's crazy to me. Cause I'm not a, if you know me, I'm not the biggest Winners at War fan. I think that Tony plays a great game, but I think overall it's like fine.
Yeah.
And I definitely don't think it's one of the better returning player seasons. I think it's, I mean, they're
South Pacific was out of the bottom 10 and I was like, this is crazy. Yeah. And someone like must have listened to me.
Yeah.
I'm one of the more like vocal of, I don't hate South Pacific.
And you know what? That's I see where you're coming from with that. But there were some that I'm like, China at 27 or whatever it was. I said, that is actually a crime against humanity. And so I was talking to Tony Squares about this and he goes, actually, I saw that list and I agreed with most of it. And I went,
well, we saw his list after he watched for the first time all those seasons.
Yeah,
and it is.
But questionable. It's so funny, though, that it brings us back to one of the first points you made, that people are going, if there is an opinion to be had about Survivor or about a person or about a season, somebody will have it. That is what I've learned about the internet, is that somebody will have, there is somebody who despises returning player season. There is somebody who, you know, every single person will have an opinion. And it's so fun to talk to people who really know what they're talking about and have a differing opinion, because there's not much in life where you can get into a spirited debate with somebody where it doesn't matter.
Yeah. It doesn't, you're not going to go home and be like, I'm wounded because you're now attacking me personally.
Yeah. It's like, there's not much in life where, you know, cause let's be real. Survivor isn't that serious. I mean, it is, it's very serious, but it's also like not that serious. So when you can get into a debate with somebody about something that's not that serious, it's kind of like fun a little bit. Can you tell I was on debate in high school?
Yeah, I was not in debate, but I love hearing people out on their opinions of why they might like something or not like something that I do or do not. And then just like talking it through and be like, okay, so, you know, why did Edna make Sophie the winner of the season? Well, let me tell you why she was so instrumental in South Pacific.
Edna.
Yeah, Queen.
Edna Queen. Okay, well, now that I asked what your favorite and players and season is, what is your least favorite season? And if you want to go least favorite player.
Oh, easy. They're both, it's on both Nicaragua and Shannon Elkins. The worst.
You really don't like Nicaragua that much.
I hate Nicaragua so much. I like, it's has always been my least favorite season ever. And I understand there are definitely worse seasons. Thailand, Island of the Idols has a blip in there.
But it's such a, Island of the Idols is actually a pretty good season. This one person ruins it.
Terrible. Like, it's just the one person just really puts a damper on a lot of it. But I understand that there are probably like worse seasons. But for me, Nicaragua grinds my gears. And that's so funny. Just cannot get past it. And then, Shannon is just worse.
That is so funny. It's so funny that, like, I think that super fans always have like that one, like, where you're just like, this one person is just not for me. Like, I can't do it. Like, mine, Dan the Postman.
Yep.
I can't actually. And I like that. I don't love that season mainly because of him.
So Austin, who makes all of our thumbnails, Instagram stuff, during season 46, we were joking around somehow, and then he made this thumbnail of all Shannon, and our chat name is called Shannon Sweethearts. just to annoy the crap out of me. He was like, this is going to be the next Rewind episode, right? And it's just all Shannon. And I'm like, I'm going to go home now.
That's so funny. That is so funny. You know, so when I did my like rewatch poll, I did, the first one was all seasons, all 49. I didn't do season 50. I did all 49 seasons. The season that had zero votes for the longest, not 49, not South Pacific, not Thailand, Nicaragua. Not 41, not 42, not 39, Nicaragua.
It's Nicaragua. Not great. I think it just has like such a big like cloud on the season. It just feels like so mean. And I'm also not the biggest Gabon fan either.
Get out now.
See the discourse. All right. I'm not the biggest Gabon fan, but when we have popped into Gabon for like Rewind episodes, I'm just looking at like one episode at a time. I have a good time. I've never had a good time with Nicaragua.
I think that I kind of like Nicaragua more than other people because I really like Fabio. Like I
appreciate Fabio's win more than most, but he doesn't redeem the season for me.
I don't know. He's just so nonchalant. Like he's just so Judd. He's just, I don't know. And I don't hate the season. I was really shocked when it was like zero. Cause I was like, more people want to watch Thailand. What are we doing? Cause that Thailand, I hate Thailand.
As most do.
That's really not a hot take. I never once enjoyed watching Brian, and I hated that he won. Like from day, like I did not like this man from like day one. And then when he won, I went, I hate this show. Because he just gives me like the.
Well, I didn't know anything about who won Thailand. So they're introducing everybody with their jobs before the schoolyard pick. And he goes, I'm a used car salesman. I was like, he's got to go first.
Yeah.
Like, you've got to get him out.
Yeah.
And then they didn't. And then he won. And I was like, see what I said.
But I will say, and I hate to say this, even though it is probably very true, he played a great game. Like he had a great win. And I think that the interesting thing about Survivor is you might not like somebody personally, but as a fan, at least a fan of the show who watches a lot, there are times where even if you don't like somebody personally, sometimes you got to go like, well, they played the game pretty well. Like when we did a ranking of Russell Hance, I like ranked him like 2 or whatever. And I was like, I don't like him, but that doesn't change the fact that he changed the game.
Yeah. Like I love Sierra Easton, but she won't love me. Like I love the games that she played in her seasons, maybe aside from Game Changers, but she tried. And I've always just loved her as a player, but I know if I'm out on that island that she's not working with me.
I'm dead. Yeah, it's Survivor so interesting like that. Like there are times when, you know, you're gonna like a player, but maybe not, you know, love the person or like the game that they play. It's just I think it's fascinating. You bring up Game Changers a lot. So I don't know why I'm thinking about this, but they say that we're gonna have more returning player seasons. Like that's what the rumor mill says. Is there like a theme of a returning player season that we have not had that you would like to see in the future?
Great question. We could do a One Brand World Steel. Returnees.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think I was listening to a podcast. Those of you who don't know, and depending on whenever this is going out, one of my friends, Andrew Denson, is doing 50 seasons in 50 days. So he's binge watching all 50 seasons in 50 days. And I was listening to the Game Changers podcast. And I think what hurts this season is it's being called Game Changers. And what helps 50 is because it's season 50. In the hands of the fans. It's not legends. It's not, you know, something that gives a moniker to the season. So I think it almost would help a returning player season to not be called anything. It's just being called a number or, you know, a location. Survivor 34, Mama Nuka Islands. Mm-hmm. Like that that would have been sufficed enough for that cast. Mm-hmm. But because it was Game Changers and now we have Haley Ford, you know, a bunch of people are questioning it. So I almost think Survivor would benefit with returning player seasons just being the numbers, as much as I hate having the numbers as our season definers. It honestly helps returning seasons with people being more accepting to the casts.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thought process, because I think you're probably right. And it's funny because I also think, and I've been saying this a lot, I've been saying this for a while, at least for Heroes versus Villains, that I always felt bad for everyone who was on the Heroes tribe, because when you are bestowed the title of hero, it limits what you feel like you can do.
Mm.
Because it's the same thing if you are a mom, Lil in the Boy Scout uniform, like Joe saying honor and integrity, or Coach saying honor and integrity, you know. And this is very silly. I'm going to bring in my personal life to this. I'm a vegetarian and I've been a vegetarian my whole life. And if I tell somebody I'm a vegetarian, no, this is not bad. This is just what typically will happen. People will usually start off by saying, oh, I was a vegetarian for 2 weeks in college. Oh, I did. And that's, we love, be a vegetarian for a day. I don't care. But it's so funny that when I think somebody feels that another person, because of something that they do, that that other person is morally superior to them, they immediately get defensive and feel like they have to prove that they are better or you are not worthy. Because the other thing that I get a lot as a vegetarian, and I say I've never eaten meat, they always go, well, did you know that bugs climb in your mouth at night and you've probably eaten a ton of bugs? Or how do you know that they're not sneaking chicken stock into your food? You know, so there are two ways that a lot of times people will react to this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that on a Heroes versus Villains type of season, or if you're in a Boy Scout uniform or whatever else, people will either say you have to be the perfect mom, you have to be the perfect hero. Mm-hmm. And if you're not the perfect thing, then you're bad. Oh, boo. You're
like,
bad.
Cassie's bad the perfect example of that, where she's, you know, a mom and she's playing villainously and doing what she needs to do. And, you know, if she were at the end, people are not going to reward her the same as they would Tony.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And, you know, you see Reem, you know, first one voted out. So it's just so interesting. Or like, you know, I don't like her. But Missy at the end of San Juan del Sur, I'm not a Missy fan, but you know, the evil stepmother speech, which is amazing and so good. It's iconic speech. It's also very much like she's a mom, but she was also kind of playing the game, but she was also, and so because of that, she's a villain. And it's very interesting where I always go back to Heroes versus Villains. The villains got licensed to kill because they were told, I'm bad, I can do whatever I want. The heroes were told, you guys are amazing, so, so good, 10 out of 10. That kind of limits what they can do.
Especially like Candace, who is a, you know, a go with the flow, I'm going to see where the numbers go kind of player, automatically axed. And it's like, what did Candace do? What has Candace ever done to deserve any of the hate that she's gotten? I don't know. But to putting people in these boxes of like, even David versus Goliath, it still is like, I'm supposed to be in control. I'm a Goliath versus I'm immediately looked at as an underdog the entire season when someone could have not been an underdog at any point during the season, but you're going to feel that way because they're a Goliath or because they're a David.
Yeah. It's like, cause another thing to think about, like these players also have to remember that, I mean, they don't have to remember, but they will think about this.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be on national television. What person off the bat is going to immediately root for the Goliath to win?
Right.
Not many. Doesn't matter how much you like the person.
Yeah.
If you hear underdog story versus the person that everyone wants to win already, you're usually going to say, I want the underdogs to win.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do think that the themed seasons, the names, heroes, healers, hustlers, like you know, or even
could have been just 35.
It literally could have just been 35. But I do think that themes are still fun.
Yes.
But I think that like even like putting people on
beauty, where like that doesn't play into the game as much as some of these other seasons.
See, like, I kind of disagree. I think Brains, up until Aubrey winning season 50, spoiler alert, no Brain had ever won American Survivor. And I think it's because the Brains have this, you already have this idea that, oh, you're so smart, I gotta get you out. Like, you're already being put into a box, and you see the Brains usually implode.
Yeah.
Or, you know, something happens because, you know, and I think it's because the title of the Brain. I have a whole thing about how I think names and words are, I made a whole video about it. I wrote my college essay on why I think names are important, you know, to humans. But I think that it's a really fun conversation to have about Survivor, because I do think it impacts how people play the game.
Yeah, that is true. I played my first live game, and I was like, okay, I'm finally around Survivor fans, and I can, you know, really talk Survivor. So I was open about a lot of the stuff and, you know, talking about facts and figures and all that. And then that actually played into my vote out. It was pre-merge, and they thought I would be more threatening in the merge because I knew Survivor. And I'm like, I can say a trivia fact. Doesn't mean that I am good at strategy.
A real mo.
So, yeah, I mean, that the Brains, I think, I guess, more plays into anything than the rest of the season. Because if you're like, if you're just kind of meaty, you know, what else can you do? I mean, Tony didn't win a single individual immunity challenge until, you know, deep into Winners at War.
Yeah. It's just, I think Survivor is fascinating because there are a lot of different aspects of the game that come into play that maybe people don't necessarily think about. I bet you the producers think about this.
Right.
But the producers are like, oh man, like if we do this, that this means that this person's probably going to do this. Like they probably think about that when they're putting the tribes together. I mean, it was not an accident that Aubrey and Q were on the same tribe. Let's be real.
Yeah. And then like millennials versus Gen X, which gives two different groups of people rooting interests. Like, obviously I want the millennials to win, but you know, someone older than I am would want a Gen Xer to win, but that doesn't necessarily mean like I don't like the Gen Xers. It doesn't put a bias toward the majority of people, like with a, you know, David versus Goliath. And it's interesting to watch that season play out, and also then watch Africa, where, you know, the Gen Xers are supposed to be like the hardworking, and then in Africa the Gen Xers are the ones, oh, lazy Gen Xers.
So yeah, the young are always the lazy. The young are always lazy.
To watch the span of Survivor now, with like, you have go watch Africa, then go watch Millennials versus Gen X.
And then the next time we have a Gen Z versus Millennials, I bet you they're going to be like, oh, Gen Z is so lazy.
Well, they already did in 50. Like, Rizzo was just hanging around.
Rizzo was just hanging around. lazy young folks, how it always is. Well, McKenna, I always love hearing your insights about Survivor, because I think, again, you have such a knack for it, and it is really, like I've said, very incredibly impressive how much you know about this show, and just kind of the breadth of knowledge that you have. Are there any last like words that you want to say to the Survivor fandom about your Survivor fandom before I let you go today?
Don't ever lose the fandom, because I was very persistent in, you know, wanting to pursue friends, pursue, you know, this. Like, Phil and Alexa were very, you know, open, and just they always felt attainable to like talk to. Like, you can always send the specialist a DM and someone will answer it you know, on Instagram or something like that. So it's just like this community of our little like Survivor corner has always felt like intimate, even though it has grown. I just love being here specifically within our corner of the universe. So keep watching Survivor because there's always stuff to talk about with it, like we were saying. And, you know, I just love the show. It's so good.
I agree. I love it so much. Well, McKenna, thank you so much for chatting with me. And where can the people find you? And what are you working on right now before I let you go?
Yeah, so depending on when this comes out, John and I are doing Bitter or Better. We have some guests floating around throughout the weeks, but we are Wednesday evenings around 8 p.m. We are talking about the first juror's impact on their season and how they were either bitter for the season and kind of were a bit more negative light. Maybe they help someone lose the game, or better for the game and really like we're open-minded and it's a game, you know, we're all here to deceive people. And normally during the seasons, John and I do the Survivor Rewind on Fridays. And if you want to get to know some of Survivor's past, even if you don't remember it yourself, we're always here to remind you of it. So.
Well, thank you so much, McKenna. And thank you all so much for listening to this episode of Surviving the Fandom. I have a couple more coming your way. I'm very excited about some of all of them, honestly. it's going to be a lot of fun. And during the off season, the specialists will have some great things. You can always go to the Patreon to listen to weekly podcasts about Survivor, about other really great things. And then coming down the line, we also have some really fun, like rankings and stuff. Just don't want to spoil anything, but it's going to be fun. So thank you all so much for listening. And until next time, bye.
Bye.